This show is brought to you by Texture. When you go to texture.com/Joey, that's texture.com/Joey, they're going to give you a free trial right now for the best app on your phone. It seriously is the best app. Has hundreds of magazines, and you can cherry pick the articles that interest you most. Go to texture.com/Joey right now, and they're offering our listeners a free trial. You get unrestricted access to the world's best magazines, from back issues to the ones on the newsstands today. Try Texture for free right now when you go to texture.com/Joey. Show is also brought to you by Onnit.com. Use code word church to get 10% off all of the great optimization products. Go to hitesigs.com, better tasting, longer lasting. The proof is in the vape. And use code word Joey's church to get 5 hit e-cigs for $50. And go to nailedetlife.com and use code word Joey Diaz to get 20% off the premier vapor pen on the market. And if you live in California, they're also the makers of great edibles, Los Gumis Hermanos.
Oh, shit. Monday, November 9th, the day the devil was buried at sea, raped, lit on fire, fucked in the ass, chlamydia. Oh, shit. A little Roxy music for you motherfuckers. Old school here. What? Oh, shit. The church of what's happening now. Lee Syatt. Flavor old school like this motherfucker. Dun, dun, dun. Ain't no big thing. Are you fucking kidding me? This motherfucker. Fucking tremendous. Well, it is Lee Syatt, you bad motherfucker.
Good to see you. It's been a while.
I know. I haven't seen you since last week and shit. You know, we've been in seclusion. I had to go to Portland, Oregon. Which Portland, I tell you, I used to go to Portland in 1995 when I used to work at Club Harvey's, which is still there. But Harvey's is a very clean room. You know, Helium is 2015, you know.
Were you clean when you had to work at Harvey's?
Oh, my God. I tried, but the guy's mother came on Saturday night for the early show.
Oh, it's that place.
Oh, she fucking hated me. Harvey's was, I mean, in those days, I don't know. I remember the Portland, it's just being dark. I had a lot of strip clubs. I got blow a few times. You know, I went out. It was okay, but
okay. It
wasn't the real deal. Like, it wasn't like a city that I would visit or something.
Really?
Fucking now, they've done great things. And the people are fucking dynamite. I went to a few weed stores, Parma, Pharma, great fucking weed store. I got some CBDs.
So is it legal there or
it's legal,
medical? What is it like?
Recreation. Just walk in, give me a license, and go to the back, Jack. Edibles aren't legal yet from what I'm hearing, but everything else is pretty straight. You know, we always, if you're a comic or a fan of comedy or you listen to Rogan's podcast, whenever I go on there, in my comedy, whatever. The city was Houston. You know, in the 90s when I was developing.
Your class of comedy
or something. I had a lot of fun cities, but the ideal one, the comedy scene where you went, you had to have your A game, it was Houston, Texas.
And what years was this? Like early 90s?
97 to 2004, the Houston comedy scene was really hot. You got to imagine that, you know, 10, 15 years before that, Kennison and Hicks and Carla Bow and all those guys were walking around down there I forget the name of the club, but it was the last stop when we were down there.
So what, since you've been doing comedy, what are the bigger markets? Like, so it was in Houston for a part, like what is it now?
Houston just became a hip place to do comedy. Mark Babbitt made that room when Mitch Hedberg and Tom Roach co-headlined in 97, that set a statement out. That was like a tremendous fucking statement. Like 98, I think. Tom Rhodes had been on an ABC show or NBC show, and the show got canceled. But he was still a very funny guy. He still is a fucking funny guy.
I just saw him a couple weeks ago.
And nobody was booking him, it seemed like. He was in limbo, and Mitch was friends with him. Mitch was friends with him from Florida or something. And Mitch goes, why don't you fucking co-headline with me and get back out there? And that caused this fucking thing. You know, he was already bringing in Dana Gould and acts like that. And all of a sudden, he started bringing in Rogan and Stanhope, and all those guys taped their CDs down there. And it just became this cool, you know, the Monday night at the Laugh Stop was from 8 to 2. That's unheard of. There was that many fucking open mic comics doing 7, 10, 8 minutes, 10 minutes.
And didn't you say that sometimes as a headliner you'd stay for that show?
Yeah, you'd stay on Sunday. You'd stay for Monday afternoon and partied. And because Chewy's, it was a special. Chewy's, the Mexican place, it was stuffed shells, chicken and sour cream enchiladas.
Oh, nice.
So we would just stay, eat that, and then fucking do the open mic on Monday nights. Portland has become that. The really? Last 3 or 4 times I've gone to Portland, I see the comedy scene's growing. Ron Funches is from Portland.
Yeah.
There's another kid that's from Portland, Oregon.
And that's all I've heard for years is how great Portland as a city is. So I'm just surprised to hear that you didn't have a good time there before.
But what I'm saying to you, all these cities develop, you know, over the years they develop that they become, you know, that they become very gentrified. You see all the same malls and stuff like that.
Right,
Portland, yeah. I used to go to the Adidas store, the Nike store. That was what I went to Portland for every time.
Really?
The Nike store was off the chain downtown.
What would it have?
It had everything Nike. In 1995, I was a knucklehead. 96, I wasn't fat yet. I wasn't really fat yet. I was probably 30 years old, 31 or something. I was walking around fucking Portland. I would go down there and stay with Floyd J. Phillips, who now lives in Michigan. He's originally from Michigan.
Okay.
And he was a comic. And when he would leave out of town, I'd stay in his house and do Harvey's. He was kind enough to let me stay there and do Harvey's. And
you didn't do it that often when you were
twice a year
in Seattle, living in Seattle?
I did Harvey's twice a year, but there were so many other rooms that some nights I would just stop driving and go to Floyd J. Phillips's and crash. He'd leave me a key.
Okay.
And I'd sleep on the floor, and it was me sleeping there. Josh Wolf slept on that kid's floor. Everybody. He was the guy to stay with in Portland at the time.
I've always been kind of a loner sort of person, do you think it's possible to be a comic and not and be a loner? Because I'm just hearing, like, it would freak me out to have people just staying on my floor. But it sounds like you guys did that all across the country.
I'm a loner. For the most part, if you gave me a fuck, when I was growing up, when I was younger, I wanted to go to a desert island. I wanted to go to a desert island and have 20,000, like a truck full of chicken cutlets that were hot and cranberry juice. That was my dream. Oh. That was my dream. Cranberry juice, club soda, and chicken cutlets, and I could live on an island. And in the back of my mind, I didn't think I needed communication. I was raised an only child. So I know how to have a party in my head. You add reefer, I really don't need to talk to nobody.
Right.
You know, there's days when I do comedy, I won't leave the hotel room. Like, I go eat and I'll go for a walk to 7-Eleven or whatever. But pretty much the only communication I have is with
phone,
or my wife or a friend or an agent or somebody's calling me. So there's a couple hours, I won't say a fucking word in the hotel room. Then I get on that fucking stage. I'm a caged animal. That's why I do that.
Okay.
You know, when you become a comedian, you're making a statement. You're making a statement that you want to go on stage by yourself. Right there, you're alone. Right there, you're alone. You know, most people go on stage as part of a band. Most people get on stage as part of an improv troupe. You're alone. So right there, that tells something about your personality.
Yeah, that's true. If you're alone.
When I first started comedy, I was in that car by myself constantly. And then there were situations where you share a ride with a comic. Let me tell you something. If you don't get along with that fucking guy, you guys have different views. After 2 hours, that becomes the longest fucking ride of your life.
Oh, I can't even imagine.
A comic that brings his girlfriend in the fucking car or something like that. That becomes the longest fucking ride of your life now. Because it's two men, and now I got to have a third fucking wheel injecting and dissecting and giving her fucking quotes on comedy. And trust me, when you're a comic and you have three comics in the car and a comic brings his girlfriend and she starts interjecting fucking stupidity, all three comics want to kill that motherfucker. It's just odd man out. It's like if three female comics were there and one of them brings their boyfriend. It's the same fucking thing. So I'm not just picking on women here. I'm saying this just doesn't work. So you have two people in a car. They really have to get along.
Especially for long
rides. A triple run, 5 days, some days 8 hour driving. You got to be able to like the same music. You both got to be able to smoke cigarettes. You both got to be able to smoke weed. You know, you not being a smoker, me being it's going to fucking kill you in the car. So there's all these little things, you know. So sometimes you just don't get involved.
Right, yeah.
Sometimes you go, you know what? I got to do something until 5:30. I'll do something later. I'll come down later, you know. And they're like, okay. So me, I like to drive without the radio on before a gig.
Really?
Yeah, if I got a gig even at the Comedy Store, I don't put the radio on the way down. I'm thinking. I'm in my fucking head. Why would I want to bring somebody? That's my 10 minutes to warm up. I'm in my fucking head thinking about it. Sometimes when I'm driving at night and I have a gig, you know what I do? I pick a time in my life and I just pick a story from it. And I tell myself the story.
Out loud?
No.
Okay.
Just to refresh myself of those thoughts or what happened, or I'll do that. Just a certain time in my life, I'll pick 1978, and I'll just think of me going to Boo's basketball camp with Chucky McBreen and Ralph Afuso, and the counselor fucked with us, so we stole his shoes, and we put a bar of soap in there, we put shampoo on that motherfucker, and it melted, and you know, just stupidity, just to jog my memory.
When did you start doing this?
A couple years ago. I felt that it's like a singer. When a singer goes to sing, he goes in the back and he sprays his throat like a fucking moron. He starts doing throat exercise. He's just warming up his throat. It's the same thing with your mind. My instrument is my mind on stage. There's no fucking notes. It's my mind. If I write in the daytime a lot, when I go on stage that night, it's like stealing because my mind has been exercised all day.
That's so interesting.
I've exercised my mind. So when I get up in the morning, I get that cup of coffee, and I clean the little box, and I roll that joint, and I do all that shit. First thing I do is I sit down sometimes, and I write. And then I stop. I take a shower, and I go back, and I write. I look what I wrote before when I was half fucking asleep about my day or what I got to do. I look at the handwriting. All these things that you don't focus on. But
is that why you wake up early? Like, is that why you force yourself so that by the time you're seeing somebody, you're fully, like, awake and...
Well... You know, you always want to be your best. So as a comic right now, as soon as I get up, my daughter has no respect for the door. She's two, and I can't explain it to her. I can't break her. Sometimes you just want to come in and jump on the fucking bed or whatever, jump on the desk, you know. So sometimes when you're writing, you know you're going to fall into a trap. You really don't open up a door because you know eventually somebody's going to knock on that fucking door and break your interruption. Last night, I got up at 4.
Jesus.
And from 4 to 6.
On purpose?
Yeah, 4. I got up to pee and I go, fuck it. Let me get a notebook. And I got a notebook and I got a big cup of coffee. And I fucking sat there for 15, 20 minutes. And I went outside and I hit the pipe. Then I came in and I started writing just little things. No TV on. No outside fucking up my head.
What are you, for you, because I know it's probably different for everyone. How do you get your brain started for writing? Like, do you just sit down and think of, like, what makes you laugh? Like, how does that, especially 20 years in, you probably thought of every premise by this point.
No, because you start thinking about, you go to your life now. Now you go to the funniest thing you know about, which is your life. The shit you don't tell people. You know, for fucking a year, I took this computer on the road. And whenever I click on the computer, it would say, let's say I'm at the Crown Plaza
right,
in Portland. It'd say Crown Plaza, connect. And you click that button, then another page pops up, and you put your room number and your name, and you put whether you want high-speed internet or the lowest speed for free or high-speed for $2.95 extra, and you click it on. And then your computer starts up, and you have to find another window and click onto that for Yahoo and all that shit to come on. I couldn't figure out... So I kept calling the front desk going, I don't understand what's going on with my fucking mirrors. And they're like, what are you talking about mirrors? I think I told this story. You know, a lot of people.
You didn't tell it on the podcast. Your wife told me.
Yeah, I would keep calling these front desk and mirrors and mirrors and mirrors. And they would go, we don't know what you're talking about, sir. And I go, I don't know either. You know, my wife, she got me this computer for Christmas and she put mirrors on here. What I was trying to say was fucking windows. That's how stupid I am. But who would tell you that? Nobody would tell you those embarrassing moments. I would. Because I don't ever want you to think that I'm on stage trying to be swarmy or I'm smart. I'm not fucking smart at all. I'm just talking shit up there. So I want you to see my deepest fucking secrets. This last Ari thing, I told the deepest secret that I hold.
Really?
About my life with Santeria growing up. That's my deepest fucking secrets. But if I don't get it out there, this ain't going to work.
Why Santeria, your deepest secret?
Because you don't want to tell the guy. You don't want to tell nobody about your religious things and what you believe. And then I watched that Scientology thing, and I'm like, if these retards make it work, my Santeria isn't all that bad. This came from Africa. God. They mixed it with fucking Catholicism. It's got a background to it. It's got a story.
Yeah, I don't think. Have you got negative feedback for saying you do Santeria?
No, but who knows what people believe. There's always something. I hate religious people. I fucking hate when we're having a conversation and somebody starts preaching Jesus. Listen, this is the wrong time and the place, and I don't know if you did any background check on me. You got the wrong motherfucker to be preaching Jesus in the morning.
That always annoys me during sports. When the first thing they do during an interview is like, the first person I want to thank is Jesus, because without him,
none of this would be necessary. It drives me fucking crazy. And meanwhile, he goes home and beats up his wife on steroids.
I know, and he has tattoos all over his face.
It fucking drives me crazy when they fucking thank Jesus and God. And you could tell they're religious. You know, when you go to jail, everybody becomes religious. And you could see as people walking out the gate, you could see the Bible get thrown up in the air. You just see it go, fuck this. That was bullshit. You know, they don't really believe. They just talk that nonsense. And there's people who talk that nonsense on you, and you look at them and you're like, you're so fucking shallow. You know, I know who the religious people are. I was watching that 30-30.
Which one?
Bill McCarthy. Have you watched that?
No, I haven't seen that one yet.
Very interesting, because I lived in Boulder at the time. So it was Sal and Nessie and his daughter and what was going on in Boulder. But I used to go to Sacred Heart Church when I moved to Boulder. I was lost in 87 after I fucking went through 22 kilos of blow. I was kind of lost, so my girlfriend, my wife at the time, and her family went to Sacred Heart. And I was Catholic. I figured, let me just go back and try to get a little faith. And I went back, and my wife, my girlfriend at the time, would always get mad at me.
For what?
Because I would sit in the back. I would never sit with her family up front. I always felt that I was a sinner. And I belong to be in the back. These are just my little personal philosophies. So I was sitting in the back.
So how deep is Catholic ingrained in you, dude? That's pretty horrible, intense.
Horrible. You have no idea.
I'm the sinner. I have to sit in back.
I got
to
sit in the back.
Was that like a punishment at Catholic school when you broke?
It was a punishment in the back of my mind, because I wasn't living the way I wanted to be living.
Oh, my God.
For 30 years, I didn't live the way I wanted to be living. We're just talking about this outside. People who live with remorse and people who commit and go, this is it. Okay, this is what the fuck I'm going to do. You know, and we're talking about Sons of Anarchy is a great example, but we'll get to that later. So I would sit in the back of the church.
Okay.
And I would just sit back there and think about all the bad fucking things I did. Now I was a horrible Catholic and how I had failed, you know, how I had failed as a Catholic and I was a fucking thief, you know. You know, when they fucking put Jesus on the crucifix, the two guys next to him were thieves. And I always figured that I'm going to fucking, you have no idea, guys.
Did you ever confess?
All the time.
Really? You did confession?
All the time.
What is that? I've never done that.
You got to go in there and tell him a story, and then he tells you what to do, and you go fucking do it.
Do you tell him like all the bad things?
Nobody goes in there and says, I suck 22 dicks, so there's no real confession. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, nobody will go in there and say, Father, last week I ate a Quaalude, I put a big black dick up my ass. I went to this fucking gang member's house, and I had 10 black guys fucking run a train up my asshole. Nobody's going to go to church and say that, okay? So there's no confession.
Did you do that?
When I would go in there, I couldn't say, well, you know, Father, I would go in there and keep it very, I would go in there and say, Father, bless me, Father, for I've sinned. It's been whatever since my last confession. I stole, I lied, I cheated, and I fucking, this was not me. I didn't break it down. I didn't tell him that I kidnapped somebody. I didn't tell him that I broke into some guy's house. I didn't tell him that I robbed my godfather. I just kept it very bland. Okay.
Do you think if you hadn't done drugs, you might not have been a criminal? Because it seems like the only reason you did those crimes were for drugs.
No. No. It was, I've always told parents to watch what you tell your fucking kids. You have to watch what you tell and what you do around your kids. That weekend that you make your kids stay with your parents and you go drinking, and they come back and they ask you, what's the matter? And you're like, I'm hungover. And they see you hungover. That stays in your child's head.
Yeah.
And your child is going to do what the fuck you're doing. If your child sees you smoking dope, you're his hero. You understand me? So when I was growing up, here's my mom, and she had these friends that were dear friends that were fucking criminals. So I was exposed to this. Was it okay for me? No. All those years, I was a good kid. I did dumb things growing up. You know, I stole money from my godfather. I did dumb things that kids 13 and 14 do. At that age, did I know I was going to be a criminal? No. Once all those things happened, I felt that the world had turned on me, so now it was my turn to turn on the world. Once you have an event happen to you, it could be anything, man. Your central nervous system, you start asking your religion, Judaism. You learn that if you love Jesus, whatever the fuck you learn in Judaism, to keep it together.
Yeah.
So if you doubt that and you doubt life, now you're not going to have no respect for life, but most importantly, you're not going to have no respect for yourself. Once I lost the respect for, listen, a thief is somebody who, a criminal is somebody who loses respect for themselves. Somebody who does drugs is somebody who lost respect for themselves somewhere. That's all it is. You know, when I got off the blow, I didn't work on getting off the blow. Okay? That's for fucking amateurs. That's where everybody fucks up. I worked on my character.
What was causing you to do blow?
What? I wanted to go back to the point where I didn't do blow. So I went back to a point in my mind when I didn't do blow. When did I not do blow? When I was going to karate. When I was with those kids. So what did I do? I went and joined the karate school. Just to open up that avenue. Maybe it was that was attacking me. Most people that get off drugs, they live their whole life getting off drugs. They don't work on the things that got them on drugs.
Jesus.
This is why it took me 30 fucking years to get off drugs.
Why don't they do that in rehabs?
Because they don't fucking know. Because the people that are trying to get you off of rehab have never done drugs. They have gone and taken a fucking course on your mind. Nobody knows the fucking human mind. Especially when you do drugs, you have no idea. If they sat 10 real junkies in a room, I'm not talking 10 fucking AA rejects that come in and tell you about the night that changed their life. I'm talking about when people really go, dog, I didn't have suicidal thoughts, but let me tell you what I was thinking. Let me tell you what I was thinking at 5 in the fucking morning, okay? What I was not fantasizing about, but kind of glamorizing, you know? This is what people don't tell you. So when you go to a rehab, we have to stay clean. They focus on staying clean until you get high again. They don't focus on the things that got you high. What got you high? Where did you break down? What happened? Give me a week. What happened? And all of a sudden you hear these guys spouting. When they were 13, they're fucking lizard. They seen their dad step on. It's something so fucking simple that broke you down as a human being.
How long did it take you to figure out what it was? Did you sit down for like a couple of weeks and just think? Like,
I sat down for a couple of years at night. At the end of the night when I was going down on the coke, you have this huge crash. You have this huge depression. I don't know if it's like this for pills or whatever the fuck it's like. And I would want to not kill myself. But I think about what the fuck is going on with my life. And I'd make these dumb notes. And one night I'm sitting there and I'm like, wait a second. When didn't I do drugs? What age did I detest that? Because there was an age where I detested all that shit. I understood the marijuana. Let me tell you something. I always understood marijuana.
So you never considered that a drug?
No. I always understood marijuana from day one because I saw people giggling. I saw a drug that made fucking people giggle and get out of their heads for an hour. I saw people...
So you would see people high?
Yeah, I saw my godfather high a lot. My God, my real Catholic godfather, the guy who baptized me, was the first stoner I had contact with, and he was great when he was stoned. When I was a kid and he'd be stoned, my life would be a fucking paradise with him.
What, movies and food?
Movies and food. and stupidity. He'd fucking giggle. I've been thinking about my godfather since last Sunday at church. I don't know why. And I looked him up online. You know, we were talking about my wife went onto a fucking thing yesterday about a documentary she saw about some woman who was a cheat on Netflix. She used to steal diamonds. She was the greatest diamond thief. And my wife was blown away at two things. She was blown away at the woman's ability to lie, and she was blown away at she never knew about a person's commitment. You know, we're talking about commitment. And I was telling her, I was like, she didn't understand. I was telling her, when I used to go into jewelry stores, you have to do certain things. You know, you have to, like she said, the lady would tell the truth to rob something, you know, to gain trust. All these things that a lot of people don't understand, regular, normal people don't understand.
It's hard to understand. Like for me, the hardest part would be the worry that I was going to get caught. Like just always looking over my shoulder. That seems bananas to me, that part of being a criminal.
You know, people say that they do drugs comedians.
Okay.
Like I was watching the Kennison thing and because comics go home and they want to keep that energy going, so they do coke. That's a great fucking cop out. That's just a great fucking cop out.
Not the case. You
know? No, because there's times I go home now and I just want to drink coffee and smoke a joint and go to sleep. So the energy somewhere went. That's just something they say. You know, he wants to keep it, whatever. But it's so interesting how, excuse me, I got to tell you what my biggest fucking rush was.
In life?
Like, in life. Okay. Like my biggest rush. All right, growing up, my biggest rushes were taking a bicycle and jumping off a ramp. Like the first time I fucking took a bike and made a ramp, you know, and I landed on my rear tire. Jesus fucking Christ.
That makes me nervous just thinking about just it.
But it was a 3 foot drop. I ain't no fucking Evel Knievel. I was always a half a fucking fag when it came to that shit. Jumping off buildings and shit. I gotta go walk around with a cast and people gonna sign it and my foot smells like an asshole and fuck all that noise. So that's like your biggest rush. And then when I got really good at basketball, you know, and you know, when you finger somebody or you suck somebody's titty when you're in the eighth grade or when you're a freshman or you know, you see a pussy or something like that. But then, you know, like a big rush for a young man is when you think you're a man, when you're walking to a bar for the first time and you know, just anything like that. Yeah. That's a big rush.
Exciting moments.
Now let's talk about rushes. Let's talk about something that makes your fucking heart beat and your ears ring. Okay, there's nothing for me when I would break a door down or climb through a window and I'd land on the other side of that window and there'd be nobody home and I knew where the coke was. You have no, just thinking about it makes me want to take a shit from the anxiety I'm getting right now.
But what if the cops come? What if they come home? What if the neighbors hear you? What if they...
Listen, when you, it's like anything else in life. Why'd you try comedy? What if you failed? What if you
weren't funny? Yeah, but this is sending you to prison.
Listen.
The others, you just get a different job.
You don't even think about that stuff.
Oh.
I know you're here, Lee, right? I come here once a week. I come here three nights a week. I buy powder from you. I particularly don't fucking like you. And I know you don't fucking like me. You always got some fucking smart. You always got some fucking half a fucking moron here with dreads or something like this. Or whatever, some jerk off. I know you got 4 to 5 ounces in here at all times. I know you got 6 or 7 thousand in here. I know you got a safe, but I know that I could fucking break into that fucking safe. I know I could hit it with a sledgehammer or throw it out the window or whatever, or maybe you don't have a safe. I don't know. And I sit across the street, I come over here and I cop a few times from you. I never make myself suspicious. I never catch you catch me looking around.
So you just go and just look.
I'm
and
always
be normal.
Watching you, and I'm always talking to you. But meanwhile, I'm looking at that window. I'm looking at the drop. I'm looking at what I'm going to have to knock over. One day, I know that your schedule, I know that at 3, I found out that at 4:30 every day, you got to leave here and pick up your kit.
Uh-oh.
And you're gone for about an hour. So for 3 or 4 days in a row, I'll come over here. At 3, park over there, watch you walk out, get in your car and leave, and I'll sit there till you come back. And one of those, now when I'm watching for you, I'm also watching for cops. I'm watching to see patrols. I'm watching to see, now I'm not obvious. There's got to be something across the street, a restaurant.
Did you have like a mentor? Or are you just doing this based off of instinct? Because I would not know about...
Based this off of instincts. This is how I fucking did it. Okay?
Jesus.
I asked questions without asking questions about you through different people.
So give me an example.
How dangerous is Lee?
Not that dangerous.
If I take this fucking 6 ounces, is he going to come looking for me with a fucking pistol? Is he going to come? Whatever. You know? Who does he know? He might be a friend of somebody. That dude might have a friend.
Or like be like with the mob or something.
He might have a friend. So you got to watch all these things. But if he's just some fucking jerk off and he's trying to be cool and he fucking thinks he's cool and you just don't fucking like him, there you go. You got your window. So let's pretend I want to break into here. In the fucking daytime, the front door is open.
Right.
This fucking lock, I could pick this with my eyes closed, this fucking lock, because it's got a thing on the outside of a door. I just pop that with a screwdriver, and I kick this fucking door in. I could do this too, and I could kick the door in, come in, get your stuff, and jump out that fucking window. I would case that window. I was crazy, Lee. But let's get back to the rush.
Yeah.
The rush this gave me, when your heart's beating out of your fucking chest, and I would do everything straight. I never got high. Business is business. And
the whole day before?
No, I would get, like, I would always do my little robberies. I try to do them in the mornings.
Okay.
I always try to do my shit at 11 o'clock, 12.
You don't want to be hidden with, like, the night?
Or? No. The night makes it worse. You're in the daytime. You blend.
You blend kicking a door down?
That's the beauty.
How do you blend kicking a door down?
All right, you just blend.
I just forgot my keys.
We came here 4 weeks ago. We came here 5 months ago, 2 months ago. And there was some guy laying in the hallway here. And he ended up robbing the fucking chick.
Poor lady.
That guy's outpsyched everybody. Okay? We all thought he was passed out.
Yeah.
You follow me? We saw him there, but we didn't really see him. Can you describe him to the cops?
He had long hair, but that's about
it. You saw him, but you didn't see him. That's the fucking talent.
Yeah, but he was homeless. You were sitting.
How do you know? Did you talk to him? You assumed that he was homeless.
You think there's a guy out there who does like makeup and like pretends to be drunk and lays on floors in office buildings?
Whatever it takes to take you off balance. That's a professional.
We need to get a ham on the podcast. We need to look for him.
When I was growing up, Cy Lawrence, he'd walk into a place, slip, fall. He'd sell the whole package to you. We were just talking about commitment. If you're going to be a criminal, you know, we were talking about one of the cheesiest shows of all time. What's the kid's name who tries to kill himself when he kills the junkie chick? Speed, whatever. And we're talking about Sons of Anarchy outside.
Okay, right.
We're talking about the dude that, did you watch that episode? He tries to take the kilo of coke.
Yeah, juice.
Juice. Then he hangs himself. He tries,
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, that was scary.
Okay. A guy like Jax Teller, a fictional character like Jax Teller.
Okay.
Has no remorse. He'll pull a gun on you and shoot you. There's people out there that are like that. You don't know them until you meet those people. When I was a kid, I met those people. So I know they exist. So I know my boundaries. I know people who fucking wave a gun and talk a big game. And I know people who will take a gun out and shoot you in broad daylight and not give a fuck.
So, like, you could just, by shaking a person's hand, could figure out how you're going to deal with them?
No, I didn't say that. I just said that in life, there's people that, you know.
So how do you decide whether or not you can fuck with them or not?
When they pull a fucking gun out and put it down your fucking throat and shoot you.
Oh, so then it's too late by then.
But it's too, yeah. You follow me? You never know the animal you're fucking dealing with. You know, if we look at the three last big TV characters that we've dealt with some great TV characters. We've dealt with Walter, right, in Breaking Bad.
Yeah, he's good.
Right? This guy wasn't a tough guy. He wasn't a heavy.
He was nerd.
And I'm just talking about whatever, bullshit. But the characters that we've had. Then you've had, now I've met people like Walter that aren't heavy. Their heaviness is their genius.
Yeah, like the guy who did the chicken, whatever, the Spanish dude, Pollo Hermanos or whatever, the guy who owned that, Walter Fring, and then the black dude in Sons of Anarchy, the guy, Pope, who is just like a business dude.
They turn what they do into a genius, and you have to respect that in a way. When you see a guy like Pablo Escobar making $60 million a week or whatever the fuck he was making, you have to sit there and realize that guy on the first of the month starts from zero. He starts from zero like we do. He figured out a way to, you know, whatever on the system. I'm not talking about a hero here. I'm just talking about a person's character. You talk about a guy like Tony Soprano, all right, compared to Walter, that he'll shoot you.
Right.
He was ruthless. And sometimes I know that I say things and I look at your face and you've never heard somebody say shit like that. That's why I've always loved the character of Tony Soprano. Because he sucks everything up and he moves on with it. He knows this is a business. We got no time to fuck around. I know deep down inside. You ever see when he would talk and he'd go, I know deep down inside these guys don't like me. But what they don't know is I don't like them. This is a business. We're just fucking a business here. This is a business. And before everything, there's business. There's an episode when he goes, Tony, I got there late. You know how it is to have a kid? I had to pack the car up. Didn't you do that? He goes, no, I never did that. He's serious. He never did that. There's guys that, you know, my ex-wife, she used to bitch that when her dad was in uniform, he never picked them up. There's people who respect what the fuck they're doing, and they don't play around.
I understand.
I look at mercy. I look you straight in the face as a man. When I had Jackie, I would kill you. I was fucking that crazy because I don't know what I was trying to prove, and I don't know where the drugs were taking my mind. I look at mercy now, and my age now, and I couldn't imagine doing what I was doing at 20 to make a living. I don't know how a person with a child could carry a gun. That's beyond me. Like, I look at my stepdad, I look at what my mom was doing, I look at what the people around me were doing.
When I thought you wanted a gun. I thought you were...
I want a gun, but for protection.
Okay.
I'm talking about, I don't understand how people with a kid could get in that car today at my age now, with what I know and what I've seen, could get in that car. Like, the worst thing I could do right now, if I stopped doing comedy and stopped doing this podcast, and I had to make a living, I'd probably bookmake. That's the safest thing I would do with a child.
Sports book stuff?
Sports book, numbers, little gambling. That's the safest thing I would do. Or I'd get into the legal medical marijuana business. You follow me? That's the only option I have as a criminal. For me to, let's say I was Italian, and to come out of jail and have a baby at 52 and have to go out and be a captain and smack people and shoot people and have stolen stuff around me and fucking deal with people. Are you kidding me? That softened me right up.
Yeah.
Mercy took the wind out of my fucking sails.
Could you have done it without mercy, do you think?
Oh, fuck yeah. That's what's in my DNA.
Okay. So I understand compartmentalizing, like, the stuff you do as your job, right? And I get the rush. But 3 days later, when you hear the cops are looking for you, or 3 days later when you see the story in the newspaper, you don't get nervous?
The cops only looked at me maybe two or three times in my life.
That's two or three more times than I want to have the
cops. Two, three, maybe four times.
Oh, God.
Cops came to places where I were and arrested me and let me out an hour or two later, like 10 times.
That's a lot.
But cops were actually looking for me in my life, like looking for me, maybe three or four times. And they found me, and they never found me. I turned myself in. In Seattle, they came for me for a warrant that I was issued because I didn't show up to court. But I didn't know the warrant got issued. Do you understand what I'm saying? When they were looking for me for the kidnapping, it came out in the paper. They were looking for another suspect. My name was not.
But you never got nervous? Like, you never had anxiety about that? Like, I understand that it's part of the business, but...
That's part of the... You got to be positive. You got to be positive. Listen, when you're on the other end of that robbery, you know who robbed you. 7 out of 10 times, 6 out of 10 times, your first thought is always the correct. Robbery? If it's a drug or money robbery.
But then you can't turn them in, or you can, or how do you know? Or yeah, I guess with drugs you can't turn them in. Money you could.
If you were a drug dealer, Lee, and you sold drugs for a few years and all of a sudden you got robbed, you'd make an inventory of who knew you had the stuff, who was asking questions, who you saw around the building. That's another thing. If one of your friends saw me at that restaurant across the street eating, looking at you, I'm done.
Yeah,
the scam is done. So I have to admit, oh my God, you have no idea how I used to have to case joints.
Did you ever get caught? Because I was going to ask.
Tons of times.
Like, when you were sitting in your car, you might have...
Tons of time I got caught.
And what was your excuse?
I was in the neighborhood eating. Oh my God, what's happening? Nothing. And when you're casing a joint, you're not sitting there with fucking binoculars like the DEA. That's why the feds always get made, because they're fucking stupid. They sit there, or they get an apartment, you see the curtains moving. You know, you make somebody, you drive by, you walk by, you have to have a purpose to go there. You always have to have a purpose to go there. Especially if I'm a drug dealer. If I walk out there and I see Lee across the street, Lee, what are you doing here? Oh, nothing, I'm just walking in the neighborhood. Boom, right away, red fucking flag.
Why?
Because what's he doing in my neighborhood if he's not doing something? He should be if he's coming to my neighborhood, he should be coming here. He shouldn't be going walking around the fucking... Now, let's say there's a Chinese place across the street. And you go to the Chinese place. And you bring people with you. Okay. I'm going to tell you a story real quick.
Okay.
And we'll go to break here. There was this kid when I was growing up. I didn't really fucking dig him at all. His dad was a mobster. He left a wife. He was being raised by his mom. The kid was a spoiled fucking little fuck. And he fucking, later on after high school, when I went to Colorado and I came back, and I was buck wild. I tried to work. I came back in 84, and I tried to work from February to like May or June, and I said, fuck this shit. This is not working. I'm going for it.
Just criminal stuff?
Just criminal stuff. Bartending to keep me sane, but just criminality stuff. Selling coke, If I could rob something, I'd rob it. If I went to a party somewhere, I was always on the fucking make, bro. I could not be fucking trusted. Okay? I could not be fucking trusted. I had my friends who I would never rob that I loved, the Holloways, Conti, shit like that. But I was a 24/7 criminal. And one day, I found out this kid was selling coke. And I knew his stupid hours. He had a day job and he partied all night, but he came home for lunch to get coke.
Sell coke during lunch?
I don't know what he did, but he came home for lunch.
Okay.
So my scam was, I didn't want to catch him before lunch. I had to catch him as he was leaving.
Why?
Because it gave me more time. All I would have was 8 to 12, and then he would know, and he wouldn't go back to work, and he'd be hunting all of us down. This gave me, I just
took... So like at least 5 or 6?
Right. So I clipped this guy up like 10 after 1. As he was leaving, I went in. And I got him for like an ounce of blow and 1,200 bucks, whatever. First thing I did after I robbed him was I went up to the corner to the neighborhood deli where we hung out. I got a sandwich and a Yoo-hoo and a potato salad on the arm. And I borrowed 20 bucks. I signed for 20 bucks out of the register. Because I knew when the kid got robbed, he was going to go up there looking for me. And the guy was going to go, you're crazy. He just was up here and he got a sandwich on the arm. And he borrowed 20 bucks.
Jesus.
I was covered the whole fucking while. I would not do a line of coke. I would take the money I robbed from you and give it to one of my friends. And I'd take the coke and stash. And I would not touch that coke for 2 days. So he couldn't tell at all.
But then, this is another question I've always had.
Good.
When you stash it somewhere, I'd always be thinking about it. Like, I'm like, I don't know if it's even still, maybe rats got it. Like, you don't worry about it?
Sometimes I would sell it and flip it and keep a little bit and do a couple bumps that night. But mostly I would stay clean for 2 days. Just so if he came at me, I was clean. What are you talking about? Look at me. I haven't done a fucking line in 2 days. You're wrong. And then he would ask around. Was Coco out last night getting high? Fuck no. We haven't seen him in 2 days. He was out the other night drinking club soda.
Jesus.
It's a commitment from A to Z, dog. It's a commitment from A to Z. We were talking about remorse. I was a horrible person. Not that I hurt people, nothing like that, but I was robbing people. Do I feel bad about it today? Fuck yeah. There's certain people I feel horrible about. But it's done. It's water under the bridge.
Have you apologized?
I've tried.
What do they say?
Fuck you.
That's understandable.
There's a couple people I don't want to apologize to. My godfather, I really do. I feel that I could tell the couple times I seen him that he was heartbroken. And now as I get older, I know what that heartbreak is with one of your friends and you don't get along or something. I could see it. I didn't understand the heartbreak at 21, 22 when I had done that to him. You know, so I feel really bad about shit like that. But I had no remorse at the time. If it was between me and you, you were going down, Jack. You were going fucking down. If I was in a pinch, I would just take those drugs. I loved it. I fucking loved it. And that's why I think I like comedy as much as I do. That's the point I was getting to. Because the only thing that gave me a rush like comedy in the beginning was, like thiefing, was comedy. I love my heart to beat. Oh, my God. I used to...
Is it when you're killing? Like, what about comedy gets you that rush?
Excuse me. You know what gets me just going up there? That first 20 seconds, man, is fucking phenomenal. And once you learn how to control that rush, that's... And now I understand roller coasters. I don't fucking like roller coasters.
Okay? I love roller coasters.
All right, I'm scared. I'm a pussy for roller coasters, but I would never judge somebody who went on roller coasters because I understand what it's like. They control that rush.
But is it like, does it have to be an ovation or could it be four people?
Just the fact that I'm going on stage, those 30 seconds as you're
So it's not like the crowd going nuts?
The applause and all that, that's bullshit. That's a complete different part of the game. Just getting up there, just sitting in the... Listen, you know, it's like me saying to you, listen, you're going to jail in 20 minutes and sit here on this couch. You're going to sit on that fucking couch. Well, it's the same concept. You have to make it like that. Like, for me, I turn it into fun. For some people, it's horror. Like public speaking?
Oh, yeah, that would be.
In front of 200 people? The first time you did it at the Laugh Factory, you were falling up. Bless you, high. You're very good at it now.
Well, I had done it at the Ice House. That Laugh Factory was pretty tough. But that's, Jesus, it's crazy. Let me ask, did you ever, when you were a starting comic, ever, like, pretend you were announcing yourself at, like, a comedy club? Coming to the stage. The crowd goes wild. Joey Diaz.
I can't remember that I did, but in the beginning of comedy, I was very cliche-ish.
Really?
Like, I believe that you had to see it before it could happen, you know. And you do. You really fucking, as dumb as that sounds, as dumb as that fucking sounds, you're not going to be good at something. Unless you see it happening, like, and you kind of see it in your mind sometimes.
I was a huge daydreamer when I was a kid, but like that, I could always imagine myself doing things like that. It's weird.
We all do. If you're not fucking dreaming, you're not alive, man. Think about that. You know what gets us to the next level? A dream. Every fucking time, if you think about it, what gets you to the next level? You were going to deliver pizza or go back to Boston. It wasn't a dream to get a job, but you had to think of something.
Yeah, that's true.
You have to see it first, and then it happens. You know what? I was sitting there last night. I see this documentary. I called you at whatever, 1 in the morning. First time I ever called you after like 11. That was the first time.
Really? Was it?
Yeah, because I was like, this is an idea. That's commitment. That's what we're talking about. You know, when you don't commit, you're going to fucking live in doubt like Juice did. You're going to fucking be dizzy and, did I do the right thing? You know what, man? You go for it. You don't look back. Whether you're a fucking thief, a race car driver, you got to do 150 miles a fucking hour. You just step on it and you go, what am I going to do? And it's horrible.
It gives me anxiety just thinking about it.
That's the whole fucking game right there. That's what you want. You know, what makes Paula fucking get up and go to law school and do homework and Jesus fucking Christ, can you imagine? Jesus fucking Christ, 14-hour days in a law firm, typing, looking at contracts. There's a dream that you have. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then you got to say, well, 14 hours, that's a fucking hell of a fucked up dream, but this is going to get me somewhere to where I don't have to do this and I can do this side of the fucking law.
Yeah, I mean, you always have to assume that you're going to start at the bottom, especially nowadays. I know you probably don't remember exactly, but if you had to guess around that time, where would you be daydreaming about you doing comedy? Like, was it a certain club?
I would daydream at night. When I got home, whether I had a good set or a bad set, I would daydream that things were going to get better. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like someday, you know, I would daydream that I would have an apartment and I would have a car, and I would daydream that I was just working certain clubs. But one of the most obvious clubs that I wanted to work was the Comedy Underground in Seattle.
And you just think about it.
And I would think about that club. I think about the Comedy Works in Denver at the time, like headlining someday. Like, I didn't even see this other side of the business. I just saw that I was going to stick it out. So let's say I went home and I had a great set. That would fuel my goals.
You think I'm doing this tomorrow?
And if I would go home and have a bad set to take away the sting from the bad set, I would fuel the dream with tomorrow.
Did it have anything to do, did you plan your sets at all, or was it just the act of doing stand-up?
I think it was just the act of doing stand-up, because I knew I would get better.
That's interesting. That's really cool.
I knew I would get better. So I would talk myself into it, whether I had a good set or a bad set. If I had a good set, forget about it. I was getting closer to the Seattle Underground. And that's so weird, because I dreamed about Seattle from probably March of 94. Like, I had a little list, you know?
Of places you wanted to do?
Yeah. Every time I would go to the Denver Comedy Work or Wits End or McKelvey's, on the way out, I would take the paper. Even if it was the same paper. I did that as a reminder that I went out that night. Do you follow me? So in those days, yeah, I went from Monday to Friday. I went out to different comedy clubs. Who am I lying? I went out to different bars, you know, country western bars. And like I did, I would do a line dancing class. I didn't do the line dancing class. I would do comedy after the line dancing class.
You never joined in?
No, I was embarrassed. That was when Achy Breaky Heart was big. Way before you even... You know, this is Miley Cyrus's dad that started that whole fucking line dancing. We would get there a quarter to seven, a quarter to eight, and I would just sit in my car and watch them. And then as soon as I see Andy Payton, that was his name, he would go to the stage and say, good evening. In 5 minutes, the comedy show is going to start. You're a beginning comic. You're ready to do comedy. There's 80 people in the room, and Andy Payton would go up and go, the show's going to start in 5 minutes. If you want to stay, stay. And all of a sudden, the whole room would get up. And leave right in front of you. And you'd sit there like I drove all the way here. And they'd be like an old couple and some young kid and maybe two fat girls. And you'd go up there and do comedy for like seven people on a Sunday night. That's the truth. For no money. Sometimes $25, sometimes $20.
But you still have the same rush as you do as when you do.
And then I would drive home, and let's say Tuesday night, I went to the Comedy Works for the open mic. I would take the newspaper. If I went to McKelvey's on Friday to do a guest set or Saturday, I would take the paper. He'd always have that comedy newspaper there. And even if I had read it already, I would take it home just to circle my goals that night. Do you follow me? And all of a sudden, I go to Michigan. I talked to a friend of mine. I go, can I go on the road with you? And he goes, just pick a week. And I picked Detroit. And I met a girl. And fucking the girl's telling me that in 2 weeks she's moving to Seattle.
Jesus.
So all that
planning. And did she invite you?
No. She didn't need to. I just fucking, you know.
I guess I'll move to Seattle too.
Put some music on, cocksucker. Monday, November 9th. Me and Lee going old school tonight here. Question and answer bullshit, and Lee's eyeballs are starting to get red and shit. He wore a purple shirt tonight.
Starting to get red.
I'm high as a fuck tonight. I feel good. Very nice combination of stars, the chocolate, the hash.
The other one was better.
Yeah, the hash is tremendous too. I wanna be around. Don't worry about Lee. My fucking my earbuds are already blown out. Why blow them out anymore?
Somebody breaks your heart. Somebody twice as smart as I. A somebody
who kettlebells tomorrow, jiu-jitsu at 9:45. We're meeting. I don't know if you're going that early.
I'll see how I feel.
I gotta go and sweat a little bit. Kettlebells at 11. I got acupuncture tomorrow. I'm surprised she hasn't called me to confirm. I got a spot at the store tomorrow night. Been busy couple fucking days. I put this audition down for a pretty funny fucking show, Lee.
And did they ask you to audition, or are you sending it in by yourself?
I sent it in already. I went on.
But did they ask you?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
That's cool.
And it's a pretty interesting show, but like my lines are fucking out there.
Is it something you could be on every week? Or
I think I'm too old. Let me tell you something, what I did, guys, today. Last week, I went and spent $369 to confirm what I already know. I'm an ugly old cocksucker. Do you understand me? And you get old quick, people. You have no fucking idea how.
Why do they charge you for that?
That's what you cost for headshots.
Oh, I didn't know what you did. Okay.
What do you think? I know I'm fucking ugly, but today I got the pictures. She took 80 pictures, all of them. We could put them in a horror magazine. It's fucking a horror show. I don't even know what the fuck I'm looking at them for. I'm looking at these things going, wow. You got to really stop doing drugs early. You got to catch yourself. And you got to take good care of yourself when you're young. If not, you get old fucking quick, dog. I was in shock. But I know it. I accepted it. What are you going to do? You can't stay like, you know, I can't look like Brad Pitt forever.
No, why? You don't need to be
the $369 to look at these pictures and go, oh, my God, it's almost over. It's almost fucking over.
Is that all you're thinking as you're looking at them?
That's all I was thinking. I wasn't upset. I know, you know, as long as you know this going in.
So are you going to use any of them or no?
I have no idea. I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do with these things.
What poses did you do?
Oh, you know me, Mr. Olympia poses, sitting by the pool. You know, yeah, fuck, what kind of poses do they do for a headshot, Lee? Those dumb fucking things. And, you know, it's like I got nine chins. I got a fucking, I had a fucking, this pimple was alive and kicking over my head. So every picture I got a red dot. So I got to take it to the Luda finisher now and blow Dari the fucking pimple. You know, I hate that shit. I like La Bella Figura to come in fucking full effect. You know what I'm saying?
I feel you, dog. I'm pretty sure I'm gonna shave my head tomorrow.
That's what you want to do. Dude, you're gonna walk around for fucking a Jew holiday with no hair. What are you gonna do?
I worked with this guy, one of my last TV jobs, and he had like no hair, but he still kept it. And I remember thinking, I was like, if I ever look like that, I'm gonna kill him. I have to shave it. And we moved the camera positions today, and I looked, and I was like, oh, bro, this is going down further and further. Like, I always thought I had more in the back, but it's just gone now. I had no idea.
You think it's the reefer? Nah.
Who knows? Maybe they're abandoning ship, but everyone in my family's bald. Literally everybody. So I think I'm
your brother?
Yeah, he actually shaves it, too. He's been shaving it for a while. I think I'm just going
to
do it.
Was it tough, Ely?
No.
At any level, I had a friend that was very, my God, I think back on how much time and effort he took to hide, conceal, spray paint, go to fucking tests, vitamins, rubs, magicians. I mean,
well, for me,
I think of his life, and it was just brutally.
I took Propecia as a kid. But
no, what's Propecia?
It's a pill to stop it, and
how
it works.
How old were you?
Maybe middle school.
But and it stops.
It does stop the hair loss, but then they came out that it like fucks with your dick, so they took me off of it. But I think for me, I was just chubby from like an early age. So like even I'm just now learning like what kind of clothes to get. I would always just get jeans and polo shirts. That's all I would get because that's really that would fit. So I never like was that like into like going for girls. I was always shy, and everyone in my family was bald. So I was like, yeah, it's just gonna happen. I was short. I'm short and bald. It's like, yeah, just add another thing to the
list.
I
just know that a lot of, you look at a lot of men and they've gotten the thing, and it's torture for them. You know, I had a friend that, you know, I thought I love him, and for years he lied about, you know, and I accepted it because I couldn't imagine.
What are the options? The comb over, which looks stupid. Getting plugs, I guess, which I guess is looking better, but I don't know. I don't know what
the plug still looks like a fucking wig.
Does it really?
To me, it does. There's a guy that does 1,000 commercials. You know who I'm talking about? He's a white guy, nice smile. He does 1,000 commercials. Those are
plugs.
Oh,
yeah.
And I look at the hair and I go,
like American Hair Club? Or
he does, no. He does everything but American Hair Club. Now he's in a commercial. He's in a race car and he gets in the passenger seat and the chick drives. He's always in a fucking commercial. He's got hair plugs. And whatever. I mean, I'm not mad at him. I just always, from my perspective, I wanted to know why my friend Glenn lost it. I mean, this went on, and it was fun, and I was a friend of his, so when he had a few cocktails, and he'd take Valium or whatever, he'd spill the beans to me, and I'd sit there, and I'd feel bad inside, like I want to grab him and go, your dad is, no, his dad wasn't bald.
Did he love his hair? Would he, like, spend a lot of time on his hair?
No. When he started realizing he was losing his hair, he went nuts.
Oh. I always just knew, I guess.
From the spray. I remember going in his car with him and him going, look around. And I thought we were going to do a blast of coke. And all of a sudden, he'd open up his window and he'd take a spray can and he'd spray the back of his fucking head like, shh. And I'd go, what the fuck? I didn't know what he was doing.
I tried Rogaine for a couple weeks.
He did Rogaine. He did Rogaine. He did the stuff you rubbed. He went to a specialist where you rub stuff. He went to an organic healer. Thousands upon thousands.
I don't think there's any way to reverse it. other than
I could see now. I've been losing my hair for fucking 10 years. From this headshot today, I was like, wow, I've lost a lot of hair.
Does it freak you out?
The shape of my head? No, because this is part of who the fuck you are. Listen, somebody once told me something when I got to Hollywood. They go, you're gonna win the whole time. They go, good looking guys get old and they get ugly. You're ugly to start with. You're going to get ugly and old. It's not going to matter. You're going to stay the same, which makes sense. But you look at these guys like Richard Gere. He's old now, you know. Val Kilmer ain't the same fucking Val Kilmer from Top Gun. He ate 1,000 fucking cheeseburgers.
What about, are you going to see the new Rocky?
From what I'm hearing, yes.
Really? It's supposed to be good?
Yeah, they already put an order in for a sequel.
Jesus Christ.
Because it's scoring so high in the whatever. Listen, man. We've had this talk about tons of people, from myself to Dave Attell to just because somebody is not, what's that word to you, appealing to you? Like, you're like, oh, fuck him. Doesn't mean he's not doing good work.
Stallone
is a fucking genius. You look at the guy and you're like, look at this moron. How many, he has two of the biggest, what people call, describe brands today, right? That's right, what people say. Everything's branding. Well, guess what? Who do you think invented the branding? Sylvester Stallone,
yeah.
Rambo, and Rocky. One started in 70 and one started in fucking 80, 81. So what branding are you fucking talking about, fucko?
And my issue isn't really with Stallone. It kind of is because they wouldn't do the movies if he didn't want to. My issue is just like, what is this, number 7?
Wait a second. They wouldn't do the movies if they didn't make money. Let's right. get it. It's not because he goes in there and says, fuck you. They do it because he goes, they tell him, go back and write another script. He's going to write another one about Rambo killing ISIS, a 70-year-old with muscles and explosions, you know. Oh, no, and we forgot the Expendables.
Right,
another franchise, another brand, as you fucking morons out there believe that everybody has brand. No, who do you think invented branding? That fucking Momo. You know, whatever, 7 movies. What are they putting out? They're doing a remake of The Magnificent 7? Listen, did you see what happened 2 weeks ago in Hollywood?
What happened?
It was the lowest box office in fucking 30,000 years.
Oh, they've been terrible.
No. 2 weeks ago, the Bradley Cooper movie made $5 million opening weekend, and the Sandra Bullock movie made $4.3 million.
Jesus.
Okay, that Sandra Bullock and that fucking Momo who played the retard who was married to Angelina Jolie. Listen, these new kids now, these young kids, they don't give a fuck about that fucking dude. They don't give a fuck about that dude. And Sandra Bullock, guess what? It's time for you to show those titties and that pussy. Because it's over. That good girl persona, nobody wants to see no more. It's over. Who gives a fuck that you're voting and you're edgy and you got a black adopted kid? There you go. $4.3 million. That's the beginning of the end. Bradley Cooper, who my wife can't figure out, I love him. Have you seen Bradley Cooper interview?
No.
He interviews well. He's funny. He's one of those crazy white dudes that he's fun if you get him a little drunk and you make him smoke a number or something.
I like him.
You can tell he doesn't go overboard. He does a
pretty good job in all his movies.
I saw one interview and he was not breakdancing, but popping.
Oh, yeah.
And he was talking about he would pop or whatever. You know, there's too much entertainment. There's too much. It's too much. It's coming at you now from all over. So for $8.95 a month, I could get Netflix. Why the fuck would I go to the movies?
Exactly.
There's documentaries on there. There's movies. There's this. There's that. There's who got. Everything is on fucking Netflix.
I don't go to the movies even with Netflix, but Paul and I were talking this weekend. We don't remember the last time we went to, like, we saw Black Mass, which was a disappointment. And then that's really it. Like, this has been a really slow movie year.
I went to see Mission Impossible. I told my wife, I still love Tom Cruise. You know me. I'm a Tom Cruise dude from way back, all right?
Why?
I don't know. I like Tom Cruise. I like Tom Cruise in Collateral a lot. I like Tom Cruise when he played with Jack Nicholson in that movie.
Oh, he's a great actor.
I like Tom Cruise. I don't care about the Scientology. Whatever the fuck he does on the side, it's his fucking craziness. But I like Tom Cruise. But I think I was talking to my wife that I tell you who they have to use, that they haven't been using. That's that kid from Sons of Anarchy, Jax Teller. They got to use him in more stuff. He's perfect. He's English. They got to start using
him. He's English?
Yeah, he's really English.
Oh.
Don't you see it? Don't you hear his accent come through? It's terrible. He has to really struggle with it.
No, I didn't notice it.
Come on.
I'll have to go home and watch.
Tonight when you go home, IMDb, whatever his name is, Charlie Hunnam, and pick a movie that he's been in and click to that movie. He's English. He's either English or he's English. You didn't know that, did you?
No.
Listen to him. Sometimes he fucks up his words. What episode was I watching that he just, you can't catch everything.
No, I've been impressed with him. Like I think he's like really intimidating. So I never heard the English accent at all.
Yeah, he's English.
That's pretty cool.
He played a gay dude in a show called, the comedian was in it. Nice kid. I forget what his name is. And he played a gay as whatever or something. Just IMDb Charlie Hoonan. And he was, and he'll tell you where he's from, the whole fucking deal. I thought you knew that, Lee.
No, I had no idea. Let's see.
Oh, my God. I'm fucking high as fuck. So anyway.
Those are good.
I don't know if you guys.
Oh, yeah, he's British.
He's British. I told you.
Do you want me to look for that gay movie?
No, no. What's the name of the TV show? It says television series from maybe 2000 to 2007 or 8. He was on a TV show.
Undeclared?
No. What TV shows has he been on, Charlie?
Young Americans, Queer as Folk.
Queer as Folk.
Wow.
The fuck you think I'm... And he played a gay dude, I think.
I'm assuming.
Yeah. Who the fuck you think you're dealing with? Some novice here? You think I just fell off the fucking banana boat?
No.
So I went to Portland, Oregon. Great place. I was high as soon as I landed, dog.
Was it a Burbank flight?
Burbank flight.
Oh, nice.
Nice, like a doctor. They put you in a little Puerto Rican plane.
So
I sat next to a guy, a construction guy with a helmet and everything.
Did they give you anxiety?
Every time he turned towards the window, the armpit, the whiff came out. It was horrendously fucking bad. There was only one stewardess, so I was hitting that vapor pen like a soldier. I was fucking baked by the time I got to
Portland. Any edibles?
No edibles. I didn't take any edibles with me. So the first fucking day I get to Portland, I go on this guy's radio show, and we're having a nice conversation. And I told him how I felt about, you know, the documentary and how the bullies, and the guy fucking went crazy. It was the weirdest thing.
It was, you know? Like, you told me about it, and I just went and found it online. He put it up as a podcast. And you guys were having a good conversation. Like, you guys were, like... It just... And then you told the story that you told a bunch about your mom making you go fight another guy.
And he was like, do you think that's the problem? Violence? You know, manly, I'll tell you what happened to me. That was a big turning point in my life. My mom did two things to me. One time, she picked me up at that Catholic school, and on the drive, she's like, before we go home, you got to go to the bar and fight this kid.
Why?
Because he had spit at her.
Jesus.
I was maybe 9.
How old was the kid?
Maybe 10 or 11 or 12. And my mom told the kid to be there Friday at a certain time, that her son was going to fuck him up. This is how crazy my mom was. And I remember fighting the kid on the side of the fucking bar. We threw like maybe 3 or 4 punches at each other, and I cut his lip, and he fucking got his buddy, and that was the end of it. My mom gave me like $50. I was a fucking national hero.
That's what I daydreamed about sometimes, because I never got in a fight. I would daydream about fighting the people who are mean to me.
Listen, you know how you daydream fighting?
Yeah.
You get punched in the fucking head, and the daydream goes away, right? You don't want to be a fighter. You don't want to get hit.
No, Jesus.
Once you landed on me on that thing, I don't want to fight you. You're a little torpedo. But that wasn't sticking up for yourself. You know, for years living here, I didn't stick up. Like, as a comic, I never stick up for myself. The comedy club owners, I never stuck up for myself for years. This is recently. Because when I was hooked on the blow, and in the beginning as a comic, I didn't know any better. You don't know how many years I took shit because I didn't know any better.
From who? Like, who would give you shit?
Bookers. Fucking bookers when I first got here was so fucking dickish to me.
What would they do? Like, how would they be rude to you?
Like, what do you want type attitude? Like, who the fuck are you to call me? Who told you to call me? Really? Are you funny? Like, they would just have this really weird attitude. And I had it. Like, I got along with some people, but I was very fearful. One of the worst calls I ever had was I got a call from Rogan one day. And he goes, hey, do you want to work Las Vegas with me in July? And I go, yeah. I was a young comic. It's 1998. You dream, or all you hear is how you make all this money in Vegas. Right?
Right.
Now, when I first started in comedy, a lot of people kept coming up to me going, hey, man, did you ever work for Steve Sciarippa in Vegas? And I would go, no, he's going to fucking love you. He's going to fucking love you. You and him are an item. Wait till he meets you. And there's a comedian, very funny. I love him with all my heart, Steve McGrew. And Steve McGrew and him were tight. And I remember working with Steve, and Steve would go, I'm going to put a word in for him with you. You and him would hit it off perfectly. You and him are two peas in a pod. So when I got the call from Joe Rogan, like, even then, I didn't disrespect the guy. I could have called the guy and said, hey, Steve McGrew told me to call you. It's Las Vegas. I was never good enough for Vegas in my mind at the time. So when Joe called me, I was very in shock.
What year was this?
This has to be 98.
And that was your first time doing Vegas?
First time ever. And I go, yeah, I'd love to do it. And he goes, all right, you'll fly with me. And then, but call him. He wants to talk to you. So I call entertainment, please. May I speak to Steve Sciarippa? Who is it? Joey Diaz. Hold on, please. Hey, Steve Sciarippa, how can I help you? I go, Mr. Sciarippa, this is Joey Diaz. Joe Rogan said to call you. Yeah, yeah, I've been hearing a lot about you, blah, 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 blah. It was weird. It was a very weird conversation. Like, it wasn't, and I don't know if I said something that was off color or something. It wasn't very weird, but I knew it wasn't the conversation I wanted to have. Because the week pays $200, it's two shows, you get a meal card, and that's it. This conversation's over. Send me your bio and resume. He hangs up. Fucking 2 days later, I got a call from Rogan going crazy on me. What'd you tell that guy? He's all pissed off. He doesn't fucking like you now. He doesn't want me to bring you. It was the weirdest thing.
You didn't get an argument about anything?
No. I had the situation with the other guy that used to book you for 6 nights. And then a week before the gig, he called you and he only have 2 nights. That's a scam, Leo, where I come from.
Yeah.
He always did it.
He did it more than once?
All the time.
Oh, no, there. Fuck him.
So what he'd say, he'd go to you, where are you September 12th through the 17th? It would be Tuesday through Friday, I'm just assuming. And you go, I'm home. Okay, open up your book. The 12th, you're going to go to Ogallala, Nebraska. The 13th, you're going to go here. The 15th, you had 5 nights. And all of a sudden, he'd fax you a fucking copy of your itinerary. And then a week before the gig, you get a call from his office saying, are you home close to a fax? We have to send you a new itinerary.
Oh.
And you go, new itinerary? And she wouldn't say nothing to you. She'd say, it's a new redone. And all of a sudden you get, and it went from a sheet with 5 dates on it to a sheet with 2 dates on it. And it was Tuesday in like Boston and Saturday in like fucking South Carolina.
Jesus.
And you're like, wait a second. What about the nights in between? Well, we lost those. Well, I just can't drive to South Carolina for $150 fucking. Who would do such a thing?
For a whole week, yeah.
And he would say, if you don't do it, don't ever call me again, and I'm going to make sure you don't work the improvs.
Jesus. People are douchebags.
And after I thought about it, like, he was one of the first guys that I stuck up to. But I told him I was there already, and then I called him back, and I said, fuck you. You have no show. That was one of the guys that I stuck it to that liberated me.
Did that because give you a rush?
Did it give me a rush?
Yeah.
Whenever you stick up for yourself and you know you're right, it always gives you a fucking rush. But that time, look, it never affected me. He told me I would never work the Dallas or any improv in Texas. And that I would never work in Texas again. That's what he told me.
That doesn't seem to be true.
No. And I took even shit here. You take a lot of shit here from people.
I've noticed.
You take fucking tons of shit in the industry here from people, and you got to keep your mouth shut. And then when you say something, you know what you become?
The guy who says something.
Difficult to work with.
Yeah.
We had a nice little chat tonight, Lisa. Yeah. See, sometimes it works out good. Let me give some shout-outs.
You don't want to talk more about the guy in Portland?
No, hold on. Let me give some shout-outs, and we'll get this out of here. Alex Moskoff, TFH4. Ryan Danzy, David Bravo, Steve Zoe, Talking Lair, always on the fucking move, Ookie Spooky, arguing with people all weekend, And my man Paul Luell fucking in the house. This weekend I'll be at the Stress Factory. Next weekend I'll be at the Punchline in San Francisco. And then the night before Thanksgiving I'll be at the Irvine Improv. What do you think about that, fucko?
Very exciting.
Yes, it is.
I had Rodrigo Torres on Find Your Radio. We had a good time. He's a nice guy.
Rodrigo Torres is one of my best friends in California.
He does a really good impression of you.
I don't see him as much as I like to. He's an old school Spanish type kid.
Yeah.
That I grew up with that was straight when you were growing up, that didn't do drugs. I mean, he's studying to be a lawyer. Rodrigo has seen me in some bad situations, never judged me. I'm dear friends with him and his brother. His brother doesn't speak to us anymore.
Really?
Yeah. I love this brother. You know why his brother stopped speaking to me?
Why?
Because of you.
What did I do?
His brother wanted to be you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But he had too long of a drive. He lived in Riverside.
Oh, yeah.
And I would put him on simple missions, and he would just destroy him. Like, I mean, it was like, this is what you want to do. But he didn't. And then he went to work for Gabriel, and he went to war with Gabriel. Because he wanted to be full-time. And Gabriel's like, I'm just getting started. You know, hang out for a while. Come up at night, take pictures, and I'll give you cash. But he wanted to be. And then he told those guys to fuck off.
Oof.
And then me and him spoke. And I told him what I wanted him to do. Same thing like you. Same thing. But he, no. I have an idea for a movie. What fucking movie? Let's just start with the videos. Let's just see. He had this $8,000 camera. He told me he's a photographer. Come up, I get him a deuce, do some headshots. He did these pictures, Lee, that I had to rip up. Like they were the
one this weekend?
No, I was young and then, and these pictures, they weren't headshots at all. They weren't focused or nothing. Then he told me he wanted to shoot a Joey Karate video. I go, let's shoot the video. Guess what he did? He put the video up without editing it. So the first 8 takes, he left on the fucking video.
On YouTube?
On YouTube.
What was his response when you asked him?
Who knows, Lee? Who knows what he was thinking?
Oh, my God.
So then he came up, and I said to him, listen, this is how we're going to start. This is how we have to do it, if you're interested. And I never heard back from him.
Thank God.
And maybe 2 or 3 months later, you popped up. And I bumped into him, like maybe 4 months later, and he was very disappointed. And I told him, I said, you never got back to me? You didn't want to put the work, brother. You know, you didn't want to put the work. You just want to get put on. You know, he wanted to just get put on. Like, I just want to come to work. Give me a check every week. And what am I going to get a fucking check for you? I don't fucking... I'm having a hard time getting a fucking check. Like, he was that... So, but Rodrigo's a great kid. I'm happy you had him on the podcast. Oh, he's a great comic. He goes to school. He goes to Mexico. That dude will fucking tell you about history. Your mind will fucking blow up. Do you understand me?
Really?
You sit Rodrigo down. You give Rodrigo a joint. He's a history fucking nerd, brother.
Jeez, we have so much more to talk about him.
Oh, my God. He didn't talk to you about that shit?
No.
He could break down everything in history to the T in a way that he explains it so fucking... You know when you ask somebody a question and they talk down to you?
Yeah.
He doesn't talk down to you when he explains history. He breaks it down for you. He explained the whole Armenian thing to me. The massacre.
The genocide.
Yeah. It was fucking amazing. I had heard the story. I had read about it. But he broke it down so beautifully. I fucking love people that can break history down. I'm a fucking moron. I wish that I could take a story from history and break it down my way. I just really don't know history. I forgot it. That's why I wanted to fucking take classes. What's going on here, cocksucker? What are we doing this week? Huh? Look at the shape. Yeah, I got to go to fucking New Jersey without you.
I know.
You know what? I went to look because I was going to switch my plane ticket to do the New York Comedy Festival with Ari and do a what's-his-name show. But Lee, they wanted. It was murder.
Oh, they're killing you.
It was murder, the fucking plane ticket to switch it. Oh, my God. They wanted $377 to switch the Portland plane ticket.
Oh.
$377. They wanted $120 to change the fucking ticket.
Animals.
Yeah, if you're going to fly out over the fucking holidays, read the fine print.
I'm just not. It's just, why? It's so expensive.
Have you looked lately?
Everywhere. Yeah, I can't even. I'll go back to Boston at some point, but never during like a holiday.
I got an idea. Don't worry about Boston. Anyway, so we were talking about the bully thing.
Right.
And this guy went off, and then I went back to the hotel, and I went on Twitter, and he had said some stuff, but he had said some stuff and blocked me. And I really thought about it, and I thought if I was out of bounds, and I thought it had affected me, and I think about Mercy. Now everything I run through Mercy. What do I want Mercy to do? There's going to come a day, any fucking day now, Mercy's going to come home and say some kid hit her. They don't accept it at that school, you know.
What do you mean?
Two times they throw you out. You get a walk, yeah. You get sent home the first time, the second time you get ejected from there.
Yeah, you have
to. They don't
to.
Fuck around at that school. That school's by the fucking book. You have to apologize. You got to do everything I say now. I got to think about Mercy. I have to justify this to Mercy. Do I want Mercy to come home and complain to me? Do I want to be one of those parents that goes to the school and gets a teacher and pulls the teacher aside? I don't want to do that.
Well, obviously, like the thing that, and I just turned it off because you can't listen to an argument. So it pissed me off. But his whole argument on Twitter was that you were advocating assault. You're not telling Mercy to get a pipe and beat her to death. You're just saying fight back and stand up for yourself. Maybe a punch. You're not talking about assaulting little kids.
Why do you think I asked you to go to jiu-jitsu? Besides meeting people, I know you love Paula.
Yeah.
And you know what, man? You, at 20, I was prepared to fucking stab someone. Like, I was crazy at 20. Like, I had some type of weapon on me. And I think that where you live, where you go with Paula, I watch you, and you're way better than my wife. You're way better than my wife. You pay attention to your surroundings.
I try.
My wife is horrifically bad. But if something ever, you know, you like to go eat at night at weird fucking places, and I worry about you, you could take somebody down now. Keep going. Don't fucking, you know, especially those Hassan classes.
Oh, Hassan kills you.
They're hard. Oh, and I know you're the type of person that even if I kick you, you wouldn't take me down and kick me in the stomach. You would throw me down hard and get in your car and leave with Paula. You have to assume this is going to happen someday, Lee, and you always want to be prepared. What are you going to be like, Red Band in Burbank at 2 in the morning? And some fucking black guy dressed as a clown is going to fucking attack you with a knife?
Jesus, that'd be terrible.
There's so many advantages to this. One thing I did have at 20 that I could run, I could hit, I worked out, I lifted, you know, anything could happen. Why do you think I run around scared now? Anything could fucking happen. I don't want to beat nobody up. I just want to be able to fucking defend myself and run and get in the car and fucking get out of there before the cops come. That's all. That's all you ever want to fucking do. But I wasn't not advocating to hit a strike a child. You know, when I got hit with that fucking, let's say I ever get around to writing this fucking book. That's in the outline. That day when I got hit with the fucking lunchbox. That stayed with me. That stays with you as a child. That fucked me up. That made me want to go home getting stitched up and getting my mother. My mother gave me like a fucking, an ear beating in the cab after I got stitched up.
For getting hit?
Yeah. You know, like I was, it made me become a different. I touched that scar from time to time. Jesus fucking Christ. It's not there anymore. If I shave it, you'll see it. And right now I'm starting to faint, just touching it, just thinking about it, how I rubbed it, and how the blood was dripping down my face, and how I ran from Central Park. I ran 5 or 6 fucking blocks running, and my heart pumping was making the blood come out more and more. Jesus fucking Christ, I'm going to puke. If I pass out, people, please don't laugh. Oh, my God, it was terrible.
You okay? Do you need something?
No, I'm good. Just thinking about it, like how much it fucked me as a kid, like running home 5 or 6 blocks, like running with the blood dripping as I'm running and just going, and people going, can we help again? And me just pushing people. Like I was having like, it was my first real panic attack. And I still remember running past my house. Like, I was in shock. I lived on 205 West 88th Street. So I came down 89th, and as I ran, I made the right, and I ran 2 stoops down.
You were just too excited? Or too?
Something happened to me, and I held on to the stoop, and I seen the blood hit the fucking sidewalk, and I felt the blood dripping down my face, and something made me run up the fuck. And by that time, the lady who was cleaning the house, she knew something was going on. So they let me upstairs. I went into my house, and they had to call my mother to take me to the hospital. This lady that was cleaning the house, I forget what her name was, she took me to the hospital. They had to wait for my mom before they could stitch me up.
That's fucked up.
So by the time my mom got there, my mom was going to fucking throw up. Because first of all, I wasn't supposed to be at Central Park.
Oh, that's why.
Okay, so right off the bat, my mother was going to beat me right there at the fucking hospital.
Just why couldn't you be in Central Park?
Because I was supposed to be at school. I played hooky in the first grade.
Oh, Jesus Christ, Joey.
Oh, no, 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 no. This was the real deal, Mongolia.
How do you play hooky in first grade?
I didn't go back to the afternoon session. Me, Debbie Dominguez, and some other fucking kids just took off, and I went. I used to eat hot dogs on the corner of 89th Street by PS 166. There used to be a little hot dog man that I made tremendous fucking hot dogs. They stopped me, and he used to give you an orange drink for a quarter, Lee. It was this little fucking container. It was an orange drink, not orange juice.
Little plastic cartons or jugs?
Cartons. Old school. It was a little carton. This is 1969, 68, Lee. Your daddy was still fucking coming on Jew girls in Boston at some fucking elementary school or something.
Yeah, let's not talk about that.
Right? So you weren't even a thought at that time.
Thank God.
And in the afternoons, they used to say you're not allowed to leave the premises. So my mom, they made us take a lunchbox to school. That's what happened. And then one day we were fucking like, fuck this, let's go to the park. And we went to the park, and in the park we started running different directions. And all of a sudden, these three little...
Six-year-old monsters.
And all of a sudden, these three little kids, I took them for granted, Lee. I took them for granted. I thought we were all together. So it was like bushes in Central Park. There's a lake in the middle.
Uh-huh.
But we didn't go down the walk. In those days, you wanted to be a kid. So you want to be adventurous, so you jump that little wall. It's been years. This is, you know, I was active a lot in Central Park in the 80s. I would go there and kill time. I would go there, smoke a joint, and walk through the park in the daytime. In the daytime.
Is it scary at night?
I wouldn't go in there at night in the fucking 80s. It was known for people getting fucking beat up and dragged. I don't know. I don't know nothing. I just know I wouldn't go there in the nighttime. I would go there in the daytime to kill time. To smoke a joint and walk through the park with a Walkman on.
Okay, that sounds nice.
And?
Go to the zoo?
Nah, there was no fucking... Yeah, there was a zoo there, but nah, it wasn't until there was a lake, and you walk around by the lake, and you could rent these little fucking... But this is 40 fucking years. I don't even know what it looks like now. But we were cutting through the weeds there, and I mingled up with these other kids. And all of a sudden, they started saying, what's in the lunchbox? And I looked at these kids like you, like I was with some kids, then I turned into some other kids, and one thing led to another. They asked me what was in the lunchbox, and one thing led, and something happened. And one went to pull the lunchbox, and when he went to pull the lunchbox, I didn't know what the fuck to do, and all of a sudden they started swinging at me. Like,
just a random like group of other 6 year olds, like roaming they were probably Central Park,
8, 9, whatever the fuck they were. And there was three of them. And next thing you know, I got punched in the fucking head. I threw a couple punches. I threw a kick. And they took the lunchbox from me. And they opened it. And that's when the kid hit me in the head with the fucking thermos. The thermos had glass in it. I'll never forget when the thermos hit my head, I had the glass breaking. Jesus Christ. And I remember getting up and like swinging two or three times. Like now I connected with one of the kids. And then something happened, dog. I found the blood. And I just started yelling. Like, I had never experienced that before in my life. I just thought that was the worst day of my life for years.
It sounds pretty bad.
For years, because I never knew that day would ever come. Nobody told me that you're going to get hit in the head with a lunchbox or blood was going to gush out of your fucking head. So I ran the fuck homely, and I had to go to the hospital and wait. I'll never forget the towels. You know, what my neck looked like, how much blood had just on my neck. They had to rip my T-shirt off. And when my mother came, they stitched me up. My mother fainted during while they were stitching me up. I cried like a pussy. In those days, they put a sheet over your head like a KKK with a hole in it. And they stuck a needle of Novocaine into the fucking... Oh, my God, my eyeballs hurt.
They just numbed your entire head?
Oh, my God, Lee, it was horrendous. And they'd stitch you up like a fucking sweater. And you just sit there and fucking yell. Oh, God, it's horrible. My mom was yelling, I was yelling. And my mom wanted to know what the fuck I was doing at the park. And she was interrogating me while they were stitching me up. And then in the car on the way home in the cab, she fucking gave me a fucking ear beating about you got to stick up for yourself and what happened and blah, blah, blah. But it had to be maybe 2 weeks later. Once my stitches were taken, I joined karate. And that was it. Fuck that. I was never going to get in that position again. Fuck you. That was horrible, dog. That was a day from fucking hell because I experienced everything. Anxiety, I fainted, I got hit in the head, everything. I hit the fucking trifecta. Bad luck, dog.
6 years old, 7 years old, Jesus Christ.
Well, you got to call reality at a dose, man. But before that, I almost drowned at Central, at fucking Coney Island.
Of course you did.
When I almost seen the piece of shit save me. That's what saved me. I saw a little piece of shit in the ocean.
And little, you know you're going to be okay? Just a little piece of shit. You're like, I'm going to be okay.
What woke me the fuck up? You know, you're at the beach. You think everything's beautiful. And all of a sudden, you're in the ocean. And a little piece of shit floats by you. Oh, my God, Lee.
So...
What?
Yeah, so he kept saying, like, you were advocating assaulting kids and stuff.
You know what? At the end of the day, fuck him, man. There's people that have their thoughts, and then they raise these kids, and then they blame everything on society. How kid? Yeah, it's cold world out there, man.
I was bullied. I wish someone had talked to me into fighting some people. I wish
I'd... And it's not even about the fighting. It's the confronting to make them stop bullying you and what the consequences are then. And how you adjust to that. That's a big step for a child. And it goes with you the rest of your life. You know what I'm saying? Like, it stays with you. And eventually, and you stick up for yourself. We've had discussions, you know, and you've said different things, and I appreciate
it. It's getting hard. It was hard for me.
Like, no, and it's very good. You have to fight for what's yours. You have to say something for what's yours. If you're mistreated, you have to raise your hand and go, I feel like I'm being mistreated. Because if you don't stop it, then it fucking never ends, man. You know, and then it keeps going and you carry it into other situations where I break your balls all the fucking... The fuck is that? I break your balls.
Right.
There's a big difference of disrespecting you. There's some people that are your bosses and they say shit they really
can't. Oh, yeah.
And here in this town, oh, fuck, they'll say anything to you, these fucking savages. So, no, I just, listen, I don't give a fuck anymore about the, I really don't. I'm at an age where I don't give a fuck.
But like, you said he has a reputation for starting fights.
Like, that's what they were saying, that he confronted a couple people from from Portland don't really like him.
That
he always
make sense
talks
to me.
Shit about some fucking, he's on AM. That makes sense. You get it?
Yeah, but.
Who gives a fuck?
It's awkward to listen to a fight.
Well, what are you going
to
do? There's some people that enjoy that shit.
Oh, God.
There's some people that like that stuff. I don't want to confront nobody on this podcast. I don't want nobody to confront me. You want to confront me later on.
Yeah.
This is a forum for fucking us talking and telling our stories and whatever, eating some fucking edibles and whatever. I don't want to fight nobody on a fucking podcast or on a radio show. It's the last thing I wanted to do.
Yeah, it's the worst.
And I didn't curse on AM. That's all that mattered. I didn't curse. I yelled back at him and I stick with what I fucking believe. And fuck him. And then I found that lady has a kid's foundation. I'm like, who gives a fuck, man? Kids, whatever. You have to teach. I don't want my child getting bullied.
No.
I want my child to be aware of her surroundings. I want her to know what she's able and not able to do and how she has to fucking behave.
And you also don't want her to be a bully.
No, I don't. You know, there's a little girl that's bigger than them that bullies them. And I can see how Mercy walks away from her. Mercy's instincts avoid her. Just avoid her. There's a way to avoid people, you know, and there's, like I said, there's a gift that I learned when I was a thief to disappear, how to hide and how to be in the room but not be in the room. You learn these things, you know. Thank you for calling it instincts tonight. Yes, I learned all that shit on my own. I was a predator at a young age, and it carried over. And now, even before the podcast, we were talking about agents and how well I was doing 10 years ago theatrically. Because I was more in control. I took chances. I got tapes to people. I knew a film. I just don't have the time anymore. I'm too spread out, too thin.
Right.
If I had the time, I know there's not much going on, but what would be going on, I'd be going in on. Because I know how to get my foot in the fucking door. It's a little tougher now since 9/11. You just can't walk in the studio and say, I want to drop an envelope off.
You can't?
And they have public addresses, like they have P.O. boxes on Larchmont, a lot of them.
Right.
But they're not really their offices there. That's their general billing offices. Their offices are in studios while they're casting the shows. So if they're casting a Paramount show, they're at the Paramount lot. If they're casting a Fox show, they're on the Fox lot. Their office is where they keep whatever. You don't even know where the fuck their offices are half the time anymore.
You don't have to go there.
No. In the old days when I got here, you want to book something, you want to see this lady, she doesn't know who you are, get a headshot and a resume and a tape and drop it off. And you got to convince the fucking receptionist to give it to her.
That was what you had to do?
You have to convince the receptionist.
How would you convince them?
By being nice and being honest. And saying, listen, I fucking want to be in on this movie and she doesn't want to see me. I just want to drop a tape off personally. And listen, it didn't work a lot, but sometimes it did work for me. It did work a lot for me by hustling. That's hustling. That's hustling yourself. That's in the old days, that there's a page, showfacts.com. Showfacts.com used to be a great source of breakdowns. I built the beginning of my career. I booked Cold Case out of that fucking page. I booked a few films out of that page. When I first got here, my first resource for acting was Backpage. That comes out on, or whatever, not Backpage. That's a porno one, right? This is like a Backstage Backpage. Mm-hmm. Backstage was the one that came out Wednesday afternoons. But those jobs didn't pay. I knew I had to build a reel up. And then that came along, Showfax. And Showfax provided a service for co-stars, non-union films, and like categories, like extras. But some of those films were leads.
Oh.
So they would be looking for extras, and I knew they were. So you're looking for mafia types. That means you're looking for leads. Even if it's a short SAG film, they would pay. I'd go down there, boom, get 200 a day, whatever, and at least get real. And learn what the fuck I was doing and get paid. I knew nobody was going to see that fucking movie.
What were they, like, longer movies? Or were they, like, short films? What were you shooting a lot of?
I have a lot of films on IMDb. But I guarantee there's 20 things I did on IMDb. Because I think about them and I go, what the fuck ever happened to that? Those people gave me $1,500 for 3 days. What ever happened to those people? And I looked to see the project. They don't have a webpage up. Nothing. There was a movie I did where the whole family invested on this movie. They remortgaged their home.
Oh, no.
I never saw those people again in this town.
I wonder if they sell it overseas.
I go to IMDb and the movie's there. It's amazing how many things I did that are not on IMDb. I did a trailer with Michelle Pfeiffer and Pierce Brosnan. I never saw that again. I did this other stupid movie about gambling that we shot at night, that they paid me. I never, maybe 2004, I never fucking saw that or heard from those people again. The check cleared, and God knows what happens to those fucking things.
Jesus, it's scary.
It's really, the movie that Ari did with the dude, that's that movie that got a trailer that they took, it yanked. It did really bad. Ari did a movie. What's the name of the movie?
A new movie?
Yeah, look and see. Ari's got two movies on IMDb. Inappropriate comedy or something like that. Remember that movie they all did? Yeah. Okay, that kid came out here with $3 million. Okay? He fucking booked a bunch of people.
It says Keeping Up with the Joneses.
Ari Shaffir?
Yeah.
No, what's the movie he did? I don't know what the fuck.
Yeah, Keeping Up with the Joneses.
Who else is in the movie? Click on it.
Gal Gadot, Isla Fisher, John Hamm, Zach Galifianakis.
No, that's not the one. He did one before that.
Inappropriate comedy.
Yes. Who's in that?
Okay.
That's what the fuck I'm saying, Lee. Didn't I tell you it was inappropriate comedy?
I thought you were talking about the other one.
Jesus Christ on a crutch. Inappropriate comedy was Lindsay Lohan.
Rob Schneider, Michelle Rodriguez, Aaron Brody, Lindsay Lohan, Ari, Dante, and the guy who directed it was Vince Offer.
Okay. Well, that movie, the guy had loot.
Okay.
And he came out here and started giving out fucking loot like it was nothing. 30 G's, 50 G's, 60 G's. They sucked him dry. He had to get more loot to invest in the movie. And the movie came out and bombed. Like it was just a disaster, a movie. Maybe he sold it overseas or whatever. I'm not criticizing the film. I'm just telling you the results of the film. At least there's movies that you do like that that you don't know what, that they pay you. I did a mob movie for like 11 days that paid me, and I never heard or saw those people ever again. I did Raging Bull. With remember that? You were hanging out with me.
Yeah, and it never came out?
Never came out.
I had everybody in it.
They keep re-releasing the fucking date. You have no idea, guys. That's why when you shoot something, I used to worry and want to get a reel, and I just let it go. I shot it. Who the fuck knows when it's going to come out, how, when, who? It doesn't matter.
I feel you, dog.
I feel you. Let's get the fucking sponsors ready. Let's get the fuck out of here. Give me the new one. Yeah, thank you, my brother. You bad motherfucker. At least I am here. All right, now, let's see. Where do we start here? You know, I can't tell you the frustration I feel when I want to read about topics that interest me. And most, I got to manually search for content on the internet. For those of us who want premium content and don't have time to waste finding it, there's a thing called Texture. The best way to read all your favorite magazines anytime, anywhere. Texture is the app that gives you an all-access pass to the world's best magazine right on your phone or tablet. Browse hundreds of magazines and cherry-pick the articles that interest you the most. The Texture editorial team recommends stories for me daily. Plus, their curated collections let you dive deeper into the topics. Sign up for Texture right now and in mere seconds gain insider access to every best reads plus exclusive content. The best part is, Texture is offering my listeners a free trial right now when you go to texture.com/Joey. Think about that. You'll gain unrestricted access to the world's best magazines from back issues to the ones in newsstands today. Try Texture for free right now when you go to texture.com/Joey, okay? The Texture app is the easiest way to get the top stories and news noteworthy sections updated throughout the day. Let me tell you the magazines that are on there. For you people who are fucking into magazines, this is a tremendous thing. You can download them, go on a plane. Lee loves it. He uses this stuff all the time. You got People. You got Popular Science. You got Rolling Stones. You got Running Times. For you people who like to run. You got Motor Trend, National Geographic, Draft, Domino, Dr. Oz. Look at this. You have a premium also. But yeah, it's all included. I mean, Oxygen, Parents, PC Magazine, Esquire. It's just the beginning. Do me a favor. Go right now. Get a free trial right now when you go to texture.com/Joey. Think about that. You'll gain unrestricted access to the world's best magazines. All right? Go there right now. You're going to love this. Right now, try for free. When you go to texture.com/Joey, how's that, Lee?
We have a lot of people who take like the train to work or the bus to work, or they fly a lot. This is perfect for you because you can download them. So you don't have to be on Wi-Fi. You just download them before you leave, and then you have full magazines. It's really cool.
Very cool. Number two, you know me. I'm always running without that Shroom Tech. When I fly in the fucking winter, Shroom Tech, Immune is the only way I go. Two before I get on the plane, two while I'm on the plane, two when I get off, and the whole trip in that fucking comedy club, I'm taking Immune. I get that by the fucking box every month. That's the only way I travel and stay fucking healthy, guys. I'm not going to lie to anybody. I live off those Shroom Tech Immune. So if you're in contact with a lot of people got herpes around you, you don't want that shit in your life, get some Shroom Tech Immune just to get the party started. Let's say you want to jump up and down for a few hours, get some Shroom Tech Sport. What I'm telling you is go to Honor.com right now. They have a great selection of natural supplements. Their highlight is Alpha Brain, complete earth-grown nootropics with Alpha GPC and AC-11. Ask me what that is. I have no fucking idea. What I know is you make you feel good, and you get 100% money-back guarantee. Go to Honor.com right now and press in.
Church.
Boom. And get 10% off your first order delivered right to your door, and you get it monthly with the Stay On It program. Hit these cigs. You're asking me, what are you smoking, Joey? This is the cigarette, and this is the cigar. The cigarette comes in 24, 16, 8, and 0. The cigar comes in tremendous 1,200 guaranteed puffs for the both of them. You can't fucking lose. Go to HittyCigs.com right now and press in.
Joey's Church.
And usually they're $20 a piece. Right now you're getting them for $5 for $50, 50% off. It's a deal, cocksuckers. 1,200 guaranteed puffs. Go to Nailed It Life, the makers of those Gumi's Hermanos. What else they got over there? They got the Vapor Pen of Death.
They got stickers. They got shirts. They got all the stuff you need for all your dabbing accessories.
You're goddamn right. Plus, they got the best vapor pen on the market. How do I know? Because when I fucking travel, that's the vapor pen I use. Go to nailedatlife.com right now and press in.
Joey Diaz.
Boom. Get 20% off. and get it delivered right to your house. A little guarantee. You want Gumi's and Manos, you got to catch up with these guys in California. That's the only way they do that stuff, all right? I want to thank Texture. I want to thank Onnit. I want to thank Hitty Sigs and Nail the Life for making it, putting it together for us. What do you think, Lee Cocksucker?
I love it.
I love it. Stay black, guys. We'll be back Wednesday afternoon, Wednesday night. We don't know yet, all right? Just stay tuned. And that's it for another fun-filled episode of The Church of What's Happening Now. See you in New Jersey this weekend, cocksuckers. Where is your bitches, Mr. Big Time Pimp, Lisa? Yeah?
My bitches are at texture.com/Joey. Go there to get your free trial of Texture, which is a great new app that lets you browse hundreds of magazines and cherry-pick the articles that interest you most. And they're offering our listeners a free trial right now when you go to texture.com/Joey. You get unrestricted access to the world's best magazines, from back issues to the ones on newsstands today. Try Texture for free right now when you go to texture.com/Joey. Go to onnit.com/church and get 10% off of all your great optimization products. Go to hitesigs.com and use code Joey's Church to get 5 for $50. And go to nailedatlife.com and use code Joey Diaz to get 20% off the premier vapor pen on the market. And they are also the makers of Los Gumis Hermanos.
Oh shit. Oh shit, look at this piece of hashish.
How do you even play that?
Yeah.